Okay, well, you heard that part, and you're going to hear Al Bergstein and I. Before we talk environmental news, we're going to talk. I don't know if Al knows about these drawings that we're having today. Do you know about these drawings?
I've heard rumors about them. Yes. What's the detail?
Well, there's two items being put into the hat. Two collections of names. Okay. So people are calling. They're dialing us up on the computer.
Yep.
And they're coming in the door.
Yep.
There were a lot of people in here.
There were.
Half an hour ago.
Yeah.
I don't know where they all went, but they're, at any rate, it was busy.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody who donates between now and, I'm saying, 4:30, their names will be put into two different, I have to call them hats.
Okay.
What else do we call them, right? We could say singing bowls of
caps.
Tibet, like we had in here at noon, rather. But one of them is for a drawing for two passes. For women in film.
Oh, my gosh. That's great.
So everybody who donates, their name goes into the singing bowl.
Yep.
And at 4:45 plus a few more minutes, maybe, I'm going to ask Heather Dudley Nolet, who will be reading before, to be the one to reach into the hat and pull out a name. And that name will be somebody who's getting those two passes to the women in film. The other hat. People get to go sailing with Emilu and me.
Oh, great.
Yeah, you've been on our boat. It's,
you
know, it's nothing fancy, but it's comfortable.
It is.
It does the job.
Yeah.
And we'll...
For a nice day sail, that's great.
We weren't planning to take people to Hawaii.
Thinking.
It's just an afternoon on the bay is what we have in mind.
Yeah.
So, again, for a donation in any amount, name goes into a hat, and conceivably somebody could win both, but you know, we'd like to hope that these things could be shared.
Yeah.
So while we're having this fundraiser, this really month-long March fundraiser, well, you know about that, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a, you know, we're trying to get ourselves over to the fort and pick up the whole building, jack it up and put it on a trailer and move it all over there, and we're going to be in that machine shed that, you know, you look at it now and you go, they're going to be in the machine shed across from 204 and behind the taps. And we are, but they're remodeling it. So it's going to be a fancy machine shed by the time they're done. And we'll have a big old studio in the basement, much bigger than the one we have here. For those of you who haven't ever been by, you know what you should do? If you haven't been by, if you're new to town and have never seen this place, we're right over at Mountain View where the swimming pool is. You can come over today. There's lots of goodies out there. There's everything from savory to sweets. There's some homemade chocolate brownies, all sorts of good stuff out there.
Really? I didn't know about the brownies.
Yeah, free.
Well, what am I doing in here when there's brownies out there?
Talking about stuff.
Calling us on the telephone works, 360-554-4430. I was reminded a while ago that I had not been giving the phone number very often. The way that I approach these matters is I want people to have a reason to donate, not just listening to me tell them and tell them and tell them. I want them to listen to the music, listen to the conversation. Then they know why they want to donate to the station.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so it's a telephone call, 360-554. I say it too fast. Start over again, 360-554-4430.
Yeah.
KPTZ.org. Or, yeah, like Al said, come by. If you do come by, have the goodies, leave a donation, walk up to the window farthest from the entry door, and at least wave to us.
Wave, yeah.
I'd like to know you're there. Also, you could come to the window that's outside here that's facing the Olympic Mountains. If the Olympics are at your back and you're looking at our building, it's the right window.
Yeah.
And people have – I got one donation one day during a fundraiser.
Yeah.
Well, not just one $100 bill, but five of them. So we'd like that too.
Yeah,
yes,
we do.
Indeed. And we would then certainly put your name in one in those two hats.
Yeah.
And we would cheer you on, maybe hoping that you would win.
Yes, we would cheer you on. And, you know, I think that the thing is that this is a good opportunity that if you haven't donated yet to us, that if you want to support the notion of this particular little half hour, 45 minutes that I do here with Phil every month about, you know, just updating folks on the environmental news, this is a nice little sort of tip of the hat type of thing for you to do that just says, yeah, I enjoyed listening to you guys talk about that stuff out there. And if you don't like that, you can send us a... whatever. But, yeah, and so that's a very good thing to do.
360-554-4430. The state legislature, where are we in the session? Are new bills still being introduced?
No. There's no new bills. They're in the budget process right now, from what I understand. There's a few bills still left to go through, some of Inslee's pet bills. The one that that I've been following and actually have gone down and talked to Senator Van de Wijk about is the – increasing habitat and forage fish protection for Chinook salmon and other forage fish. The bill's 1579 out of the House, which has now been passed by the House and is now back in the Senate, where it didn't get out of committee, but it is now going in through and should be done by next week. They're going to hold some finance hearings on it. 5580 is the Senate bill that Kevin is shepherding through there, which includes some interesting add-ons that are going to get things done. That bill came out of the ORCA task force, and what it's going to do is give some more teeth to the Department of Fish and Wildlife to enforce the regulations that they currently really don't have any teeth to enforce. And that's part of the problem of environmental law in general, as we all know, that there's very little enforcement of what goes on in the way of comes out of law. So that's happening. And there's still the Oil Transportation Safety Bill, which is interesting because I was just seeing today a posting that I reposted on my environmental blog about the amount of tanker increases coming out of British Columbia, which was quite dramatic in the last bit.
Projection is sevenfold once Trans Mountain is online. If it comes to be, it does look like it may.
Yeah, it says as KUOW had a story this morning about crude oil exports from Canada's port of Vancouver shot up by at least 67% last year. So it's already on the increase. More tankers are moving in through there, and that puts their beautiful Sound and Strait in more dire jeopardy. And it's a good thing that we've got at least one rescue tug at the far end of the strait to out there in Nia Bay to try and help, which we, those of us in the environmental movement, along with Kevin Vandewig, actually got it done some 10 years ago or more.
And I was just thinking about that because the tankers coming out of Vancouver are going to be traversing Harrow Strait.
Yep.
And an ideal place to put another
tug would be
yeah. Victoria.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know whether the Canadians are taking the kind of responsibility that we are, but they certainly ought to be. Their waters will be just and their shores just as destroyed as ours would be.
Yeah, they seem to be relying on us, unfortunately. They've boosted up since Trudeau came on. You know, it was in a state of disarray when Trudeau showed up. Harper had destroyed the budget for all of the oil spill protection out here for them. And so when Trudeau came in, there has been more money put forward because of their owning. It's sort of the trade-off they did for the oil, putting the oil pipelines, expanding those. And so that's good. That's good. I didn't know if you wanted to talk, you know, small from here out or from the far edge in from the universe. But the bills, as far as Olympia goes, there's been a lot of great bills put forward. Many of them are passing or have passed. And I think that Jay will get his clean air initiative thing that is supposed to be going through the finance committee of the House, I believe it is, next week. And that's sort of the last.
So what form will it take? What actually will be done by this bill?
Well, it puts us on a course to be totally carbon neutral by 2045, I think is the year.
No.
Well, because we're going to go off of all carbon-based electricity in the state between now and then. And so
just electricity, it's not motor vehicles, for example, and they're not affected.
Effective. No, there's nothing in there to push us towards electric vehicles. And that's one of my big bugaboos. The vehicles are the next big thing other than coal-powered, fired power. And so trying to get incentives for people to buy, you know, electric vehicles or to at least put in charging stations everywhere around the state where so that you can count on having a station where you go. Now you can't do that.
Well, I just brought up here on my computer a website from Mazda that he's quite fond of Mazda and rotary. And this is hydrogen fuel.
Yeah.
Now, you talk always about electric. And here in the Northwest, where most of our electricity does come from hydropower, but this is a apparently ready-for-the-road Mazda using their once-popular rotary engine.
Oh my gosh, the Wankel.
The hydrogen rotary engine is extremely eco-friendly, perfect for a society in which people can continue to enjoy zoom driving. The rotary was that way.
They were that way.
While caring for the earth and zero CO2.
For those of you who are too young to remember the Wankel engine, that was really Mazda's first entry into the car world. And it was sort of like a two-seater sports car. A good friend of mine had one, and it was like a bat out of heck. It was a very fast vehicle off the line. And
so all this is grand. So we're going to buy electric vehicles. Yep. We're going to buy hydrogen Mazdas. Mm-hmm. But first, we're going to make everybody wealthy enough to buy nice new cars. And how are we going to accomplish that? Because how are we going to accomplish that when we can't really agree on good health care for everyone, for example?
Right. Well, I think that the way that could be accomplished is it's obviously not something you do overnight. I mean, it's not like you just wake up one day and say, okay, everybody, you got to trade your car in. That's not going to happen. It's something that if you put the plan in place over 10 years or 15 years, and you give the tax incentives to people so that when they come up to buying a new car, when that time happens, that there is a reason for them to buy it and that there's no barriers to entrance. Like right now, you know, to look at me buying an electric car is a tough sell, because if I only have one car and I don't know where, and there's only a few charging stations, how do I get from here to Grays Harbor, for example? You know, I mean, it just doesn't make any sense.
You push it after a while.
So, you know, the notion is how do we get the infrastructure in place, both for the electric as well as hydrogen?
Mm-hmm. I mean,
the
hydrogen vehicles,
not here now. I mean, there is in Tokyo, I believe. And
really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was reading an article the other day about Tokyo. I think they have a small hydrogen set up there for a limited set for certain vehicles there. And, you know, they're finally starting to show up. And this is what I think is when people just poo-poo like the Green New Deal or whatever, which the right wing tends to be doing at this moment. The reality is that you go for some distance, you know, into the future, and then you plan backwards on how do we get there. That's what we did with the space moonshot. We didn't just say wake up one day and say, you know, we're going to fly tomorrow to the moon. We had to put infrastructure in place, and out of that infrastructure came, you know, a lot of great stuff. Tang, for example. We wouldn't have Tang.
You mean that awful drink?
Some things are better than others.
How could I possibly live? Without Tang, my life would be destroyed.
Right. So, anyway,
I liked licking it when it was not in liquid form.
Never mind. We're definitely off topic by now. Yeah. So, anyway, the bills are sailing through because Jay's, you know, running for president on an eco-friendly world, green world scenario, which is great. I mean, I don't know whether Jay's going to win or not, but and whether he's going to be the last man standing or last person standing, I guess is the right way to put it, in the field of 16 or 18 or whatever.
It grows by the day.
But the main thing is that he's carrying that torch, and you know that's an important torch for the rest of the you know, we on the coasts or here on the West Coast, you know, are pretty much in tune with that message of environmentalism and global warming and doing things, actually getting stuff done to try to mitigate it. But you know, Jay's, the rest of the country may not be there, and especially those states like Wisconsin and Ohio and Michigan that you know, that are struggling with their own issues and aren't really maybe as tuned in as we are to that. Jay will be out there taking that message. He was on Fox News this morning, doing a very good job of fending off, you know, the president's handmaidens there in the Fox News circle there in the morning show. So that's good. I mean, I think that's good that he's getting seen. He was on The View a week or so ago, did a very good job of fending them off there. And The View is not a friendly place for many politicians. They've got some really very distinctly pointed personalities on there that go after people.
I don't watch any of these. I'm wondering what my Nebraska relatives, whom I visited a bit less than a year ago, and did not talk politics, did not talk climate change, didn't talk about anything other than their farm, really.
Right, sure.
Just tried to stay away from where I wanted to be friends with them.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I wonder, I mean, there's, as you know, serious flooding, not in their part of Nebraska, but very close.
Yeah.
And the weather they've had has actually delayed their planting.
Right.
I wonder if maybe they're starting to think that something is going on with the climate that is not good for them.
Well, their flooding was historic. They had never seen anything like what happened there in the last 3 weeks. And so it wasn't even close. And so I think that they've lost virtually every dam that they had in place there in that state that was holding back the river structures. And what I've heard on the news was interviews with farmers out there who essentially said, many of my friends are finished, you know, that they never will recover their farms from this. And I certainly don't hear the president talking much about saving those guys. That's, I haven't heard a peep really from anybody lately about that. And
well,
so
a lot of what they grew, they had been exporting to China.
Yeah, and they were. Yeah. So that's another blow to them. Mm-hmm. And so I think that what happens is that people, you know, maybe dismiss or discount the climate change thing until it shows up in their back door. And then maybe some of them are now saying, wow, I wonder, this is just way beyond anything I've seen. I wonder if they're really, the scientists are right. And you see, you know, Paradise Fire, the campfire, what it's called down there in Paradise, California, and Santa Rosa and Southern California. And these things start adding up. We've got, you know, a DNR just was saying the other day, Department of Natural Resources was saying they were been putting out forest fires on this side of the mountains in the last month for the first time ever. And they came to the Kevin Vandewig is right now this week trying to put through more millions to try to support the fact that they weren't planning on that. So we're having to pay, you and I in taxes are going to have to pay more to support this climate change changing world of ours, regardless of whether it's our fault or not.
And I live in the woods.
And you live in the
woods. I live in the woods, and I, up until about a year ago,
when
I ride my bike, yes, indeed. I don't know that I could outrun a forest fire, though. And I have not felt that we were vulnerable in the woods because of the woods that we have and the climate that we have.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, it has been really, other than that 18 inches of snow, it's been quite dry this winter.
It's been real dry. Yeah. Absolutely.
Back to the legislature. Mm-hmm. What do you hear, if you hear anything, if there is anything, about amending the Growth Management Act to facilitate the building of affordable housing?
I haven't heard a peep about that. No, the whole Growth Management Act, I don't know that I've followed the stuff. There's a lot of bills. One thing people may not realize is that when you go to the legislature to try to follow bills for the first thing, there's like 700, 900 bills. I can't remember the number anymore. There's a huge number of bills out there, some trivial and some very important. And trying to track them all is a challenge in and of itself. But I have not heard, I don't think that anything was brought up on the Growth Management Act this year. I don't remember seeing it. It certainly was not on WEC's legislative tracking for the environmental bills.
I have found myself having been a person on the Planning Commission during the time when we wrote our comprehensive plan and development code, wishing that we had been able to set aside some areas for more intense development.
Yeah.
Smaller lots. And
yeah.
There used to be 1 acre lots. Now five is the minimum. There's not many of those. And that's not a very economical way to develop anyway.
No.
But I know so many people, younger people especially, who want to live here.
Yeah.
And rentals are scarce.
Yep.
Places to build, not necessarily a tiny home, but a modest home.
Right.
With modest infrastructure, very hard to do.
Yeah, and the economics of it aren't great either. Also, the amount of homes that are actually for sale is minuscule. I ran into Bruce Canavero down about 2 weeks ago.
The
House Whisperer, yes. And, you know, and we were talking about inventory on, you know, out there right now. And he said it's because he sells homes. He said there was like 37 or something the day that we ran into each other. So there's not much. I know there's supposed to be a big development going in out past me on Cook Avenue Extension. They've cleared it. Nothing's really happened.
I think I know where you mean, yes.
And then another one's supposed to be happening near that new roundabout near the Makers area up there on the upper Sims Way. And that one, I've seen, met the people that are starting to put that together, that whole plan together, but nothing's really happened on that breaking ground type of thing, I don't think, yet. And those are supposed to be relatively modest homes, I think, up there. I don't think they're looking for big, you know, really expensive
places.
That
is certainly what's needed in these parts, for sure. There's needed more of everything in terms of housing, but especially for people, not homeless people, I mean, that too, but
we do,
but also just people of modest, middle-class means.
Right.
Hard to find places to live.
Yeah.
I'm wondering how you rate our three state legislators, Kevin Vandewey, Senator Vandewey.
Senator Vandewey.
Representatives Mike Chapman and Steve Theringer, in terms of environmental awareness and attention.
Oh, I think they're very attuned. Steve, for example, has been part of the Dungeness River Management Team group out there working on the change, redoing the Dungeness River to protect the water system and bring back the salmon that are out there. And that's been a 25-year program that's been happening out there, and he actually had to sell his house, decided to sell his house on the river in order to help that out. He's very tuned in the environmental stuff, and he's run at one point. He was running the Puget Sound Partnership's regional workshops that they were doing out here. I think that Chapman is totally tuned into environmental issues, though I don't know that that's his real focus out in the legislature. And I know that for a fact that I met with Kevin 2 weeks ago. I went down and sort of
I had a feeling that you were a bit upset with him recently.
No. I went down there because his committee was holding up this key bill that the governor wanted to see passed about this habitat for the Department of Fish and Wildlife. And so we had a chat. I went down and with Marty Gilmore, the Democrats' head, the two of us went down and had a very friendly chat with him, and he explained what was going on. And it turned out that there's some farmers down in on the Satsop River, as well as the Snohomish, as well as the Akayasim, I can't remember which one it was, a third one, and that they were looking for some flood relief, control relief. And so they wanted to put in essentially some money and some projects to put together something like the Dungeness River Management Team to get everybody down there that lives on the Satsop, for example, to get them together to talk about a solution to this flood that's flooding that's going on down there, which was quite dramatic, apparently, a year ago or so, 2 years ago. So Kevin was doing some horse trading around getting that as an amendment into the bill that was coming back from the House where it had been approved. And so that's what we talked about, was, you know, that horse trading that was going on, and he explained to us what he was doing. And so, I mean, your legislators, if you've got an issue, you know, you should go down and talk to them, meet with them. It's a fun thing to do, to learn how to go do that. I've taken people and trained people on how to do that in the past. And it's good for all of us to understand that these folks just go down there, and there's a lot of horse trading that goes on. These bills, that's what they talk about, the sausage being made. And
let's change context a little. We don't have much time, unfortunately. Right. Thank you for this. Yes, you're very kind, coming to me and bringing me a cup of coffee. Of course, we know music to drink coffee to, conversation,
that's right.
In this case, or me to drink coffee to. The swamp.
Yeah.
Yes, the swamp. This is now moving
swamp.
From Washington to Washington. This is to D.C. This is the swamp that the president promised to drain. David Bernhardt.
Oh, yes.
David Bernhardt, likely to be appointed.
That probably will.
Confirmed, rather, Secretary of Interior.
Yep.
What do we know about him? Is he part of the swamp?
Oh, he's certainly part of the swamp. He's been an oil lobbyist for years, and he showed up in the Department of Interior back under Bush, and it's really the chicken, the fox being put in charge of the hen house, in the sense that he has lobbied hard to do away with environmental protections, and he's being put in charge of environmental protections of the Interior Department for all of, especially our western lands, which are way more than eastern lands.
Just summarize quickly what the Interior, I believe, manages state parks.
Mm-hmm. They do,
but
yeah.
Besides that?
Oh, the rangeland out there, and that's been so contentious down in Oregon, you know, at the Malheur Reservation and stuff like that. There's our western public lands
Is under our public lands, Al?
Well, our most of Utah.
Underneath the public lands is oil.
Oh, yeah.
And natural gas.
Yeah, okay,
and
right.
Much of this is about...
It's about oil and natural gas. Uh-huh. And, you know, the thing that people should be concerned about is that in countries where oil is the dominant product and the dominant thing that they sell, other than Norway, which is a socialist country, almost all oil-producing countries are essentially dictatorships. When you look around the world, the sale, the use, and the drilling and everything turned countries apparently into dictatorships. And it's certainly concerning to see the oil industry. This guy's worked for Halliburton in the past, for example, Dick Cheney's company. And so what we're seeing is that Donald Trump is turning our public lands over to the oil industry to exploit for their own benefit and their shareholders' benefit, obviously, to an extent unprecedented. And that if you go to places that you may have visited in Nebraska or North Dakota or South Dakota or Colorado, maybe 30 or 40 years ago, you would be shocked to see what's happened. There are oil wells everywhere. And so that's what we're doing. We're turning our public lands and many of our private lands into oil refineries, essentially, oil drilling
so
operations.
So one would expect to see, and listeners now, mm-hmm. people listening right now who are supportive of the mm-hmm. oil industry might be excited to see prices at the pump dropping.
Sure.
They haven't been.
No, we have a sort of unusual scenario out here because of the fact that on the West Coast we have these a limited set of refineries, and our oil has to be shipped in either by pipeline or by tanker.
I don't think that around the country there has not been a
cheap in many places.
But the point being that the increased opportunities mm-hmm. for the companies that from everything from drilling to refining could conceivably be driving the price. I mean, what would the benefit to consumers be otherwise?
Right. Well, these companies also ship overseas. And so, you know, countries like Japan need to import virtually all their oil. So there's a variety of things that are being done, but we're essentially using that oil and natural gas, a lot of things that's going on now, the fracking situation, which I heard this amazing story. There was a debate that I heard on the radio a few weeks ago with a fracking guy and some environmentalists and something, and the fracking guy said, the fracking liquid is safe enough to drink, and I'll do that. And they said, no. And he said, yeah, and he actually drank the fracking fluid.
And then probably washed it down with Agent Orange, huh?
Well, apparently, as they explained, the fluid itself is not that toxic, but once you put it in the ground apparently like some salts or something like that in there and some other things. But anyhow, it was interesting to see him do that. But yeah, this Interior Secretary is going to, they're putting Halliburton's oil guy lobbyist in charge of all of our natural lands, and that's not a good thing. So the more that we can, you know, put them to the test is
great. Which is totally parallel to the individual now, the administrator of the EPA.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's a coal man. Yeah. So we have coal man in charge of the EPA. Yep. We have an oil man in charge of Interior.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And this has gone on before. This is the same thing that the Reagan administration did.
Yeah.
The Bush administration, maybe to a lesser extent.
Yeah, in Canada.
Yeah, and in Canada as well. In Canada. So we're seeing history, for better or worse, repeat itself.
Yeah, and for the worse because they continue to do it. The interesting thing was I saw on the news, I watch financial news pretty closely. That Dominion, the big electrical southeastern electrical utility company, just announced they're going to be closing a bunch of coal plants. So they're moving to natural gas really fast. So all this saving of coal
that the president talks about
is like, you know, that's just, you know, that's going the way because it's just not
make
economic.
Diamonds. Squeeze it. Make diamonds.
Yeah, make diamonds out of the coal. But anyway, so that's happening. That's more stuff that's happening. So there's
time for one more thing, and then I'm going to say goodbye to you by telling people the good things that you do briefly.
Oh well, we can just go there right now.
Al Bergstein is the host and producer of Music to Drink Coffee
To. That's true. Mm-hmm.
Good interviews on your show
Wednesday. Thank you
quite
very
often,
much.
And great music on your show. I plan my days sometimes around the morning shows on KPTZ, and yours is definitely one of the most important ones to me.
They're fun shows to do. You know, we get a lot of freedom here to do what we want, and I bring in my extensive library of Brazilian and other Americana and other acoustic stuff, and I think that I just, you know, when I wake up in the morning, I don't want any loud sounds, and I think that that's what I try to do on the show is some mellow stuff and maybe some instrumental stuff and interviews with musicians that are passing through town.
And people who are doing good works other than music, too.
And that, too. Yeah, that, too.
And also oleopen.com.
Yep.
That's
your
blog.
Olympic Peninsula Environmental News. I've been doing it since 2007, and it's sort of a focal point for what's happening in environmental issues on the peninsula.
Thank you, Al Bergstein. Could I ask one more favor?
Sure.
Would you ask Chris Wilson to come in here, please?
Chris Wilson.
And also Noah Frisch.